Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the June 21 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Let's start, Kurt, with you. It's been kind of an interesting week so far, technically. We don't have Friday, of course, in the marketplace yet. What have you seen, especially as it's related to that low earlier in the week, nearly a 9 or 10-year low in the soybeans?
Well, they're definitely lower for the week, lower for the month, and probably lower for the year in a lot of this stuff. What we did do, though, is we moved down to some longer-term levels and kind of held there and popped up. The significance of this week's trade is when we made those lows, we were down in that bottom range for only like 2 or 3 minutes, and it popped back up. So technically, we could say maybe we're in a position here where we're oversold and due for some type technical rebound as we move forward in through here. On corn, halfway back up to the high of 429 in December futures is about 394. And on beans, halfway back up to their high is about 962. So that's a ways away, but if we can see the funds come back and cover some shorts, maybe technically we can get to those retracement levels.
On that day, Tuesday, which you're on, Wayne Nelson, the marketplace, in particular the funds, switched their positions. Does this concern you at all?
It did at the time. I'll tell you what, that was quite an ugly morning. You know, after we come back from the break, why all of a sudden, about 45 minutes in, things went boom, 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 and they were going down faster that you can get. You couldn't hardly get an order in to do it or get a hold of people to do it. What did make me feel better was the way that we bounced off the bottom and we didn't stay down there and we didn't close on the low of the day. Now, the question being here is, how good's the weather going to be? How big are the acreage going to be, the planted acres? And can we get back to the negotiating table? Those are all the things to say whether this low will hold. You know, we'd like to think it's going to, and we'd like to see those retracements that Kurt's talking about, but still a lot of people are going to be pretty disappointed at those. That's the best we can do with beans.
Bill, Wayne Nelson mentioned getting back to the negotiating table. Of course, the drop on Tuesday, that precipitous drop, was caused in part, or large part probably, by the administration saying, hey, not only $50 billion, but another $200 billion on top of that, and tariffs potentially going into effect against China. We'll wait and see whether that happens. I think July 6th will be maybe a trigger point, so we have to watch that. However, this is the second, maybe third time that the administration has made comments that have moved the marketplace. What do we know about the history of this so far? Have we learned enough about this, these kind of movements from this administration and other events in the past to realize what this might mean, if anything, longer term in the marketplace?
I think so. I think you can go back and look at some of the reactions that you had that were emotional reactions, overreactions that we had in the past. I think that a lot of times you do see a rebound in the prices. As these guys were saying, I certainly agree with them. We hit our fourth count in both corn and beans, which is very unusual to get to that fourth one. So I think that was a natural stopping point there. But as far as you can probably see some of both in history, where you had that comeback and then another event happened and you saw it move back to those lows again. And you can also see some where it never went back to the lows and gradually worked its way up. So Chernobyl is one that I think of. It was a very strong reaction when you started figuring out how much it actually meant in bushels. Globally, it wasn't really as large of a situation as people thought and as tragic as they thought. So I don't want to predict what's going to happen, but I think we certainly have some very solid ground here, and I guess I expect right now that we're going to at least see some comeback in the market and get back to some of the fundamentals. I think we got away with that. One thing you mentioned about the funds had been going short, but we hadn't really seen the longs liquidating in the soybeans, and that day we saw both the new shorts coming in and the funds liquidating, and saw that big shift to short position on the total funds position. So I think we need to get them back in the market, and I think we need to get the farmer to quit selling beans in South America, because one of the factors, it's not just the tariffs. One of the factors is the bean prices. With the currency weakness in South America, they got some very good prices, and they're selling very heavily, even in Argentina, where they had some crop problems.
You mentioned the four counts. Those are usually five. Do you see another one down?
I mean, it's still there. that's really rare, though, that you see that.
1930, we had an all-out trade war amongst many different countries, and that was the start of the Great Depression, so hopefully it does not get that bad.
All right, so that would be really tough, but let's say that we're not headed for that kind of movement at this point. You know, I want to talk a little bit about what all of this means and the change this week when you look at the soybean-corn ratio. Last fall, 2.6, 2.7 to 1, something along those lines, I think, when I last looked, and it's probably less than this now, 2.4 was the corn-to-soybean ratio. How much of a difference does that make in your planning when you look forward, if any at all?
Well, probably not so much on this crop year. It'd be the next crop year and down the road. There was times we were pushing 3 on that. Now, if we keep this whole scenario intact in here, a questionable bean demand, and China comes through and builds these ethanol plants, they're going to have some DDGs for feed use and so forth. So there's ideas we could probably move this ratio closer to 2 over a longer period of time as the bean demand worldwide might slow somewhat. Well, if that's the case, producers need to push the pencil, and depends what type of yield you pump out, what type of ground you have, we could see some shifts, maybe back to more corn acres.
On Friday, we'll have an acreage and a grain stocks figure that will be released. Can you give me an indication of what the trade thinks about acreage at this point? Has it really shifted in the United States very much since the March release?
Well, I think that, you know, number one, Todd, we talk about the corn bean ratio, and it favored beans all the way through planting. That looked very favorable. So if we do look for an increase in acreage, it's probably going to be more so in the beans than in the corn. You know, the one thing where corn might stay really strong is prevented plant acres weren't there. Everybody got planted. The acres are out there, and they're looking good. So the fact of the matter is we could see a little increase in both, but if we look for any, it's going to be in the beans. And the way it looks this year, boy, we should have been planting more corn, because if the problems continue on, I mean, and we know we're going to run into some problems at least for the next 2 months, that China's not going to be buying a lot of beans from us, you know, we're going to have a carry out there to go. So as we look at it, we are going to see this change if we don't get this resolved on the tariff factor, that we are going to probably be planting more corn acres and less bean acres in the coming year.
When you do your weekly updates with everybody across your particular company, Bill, what are they saying about the condition of the crop? And I'm particularly concerned about Iowa, parts of the Dakotas, where they've been getting so very much rain.
Yeah, we had one this morning, actually, and I was a little bit surprised. Of course, I haven't really traveled the country, but I was a little bit surprised that some of the areas that had declined in the last couple of weeks compared to the, you know, 2 weeks ago, on beans especially. And those areas were really southern Minnesota, northern part of Iowa, Kentucky. There are places down there where they had to plant 4 times to get the beans in, and really in Wisconsin. And Michigan is kind of mixed. But so the northern tier, like we talked about earlier. Now the Dakotas, they seem to be really happy with their crop. And overall, the crop's in very good shape. But there are some concerns starting to show up with the beans with the wet feet and some yellowing and some things like that out there. But, you know, we've got a long ways to go on the beans as well.
Yeah, the next year you probably think of was the Great Flood in 1993. But that particular year, we were wet everywhere, and we stayed wet. Man, we had water coming down from Ohio. We had water coming down from Dakotas, Minnesota, across from Missouri. It was just super saturated. And rain make grain was the theme until we got in the field and found out that rain really didn't yield somewhat then. At this point in time, we started out so dry that I think we got to continue to see rain clear through July here before we get in that too saturated stage. You take Wisconsin up into Minnesota, northern Iowa, there's some real spots in there that, you know, probably will add up to maybe 500,000 acres. We'll see as time goes on.
So if it's not about the rainfall and over rain and too much rainfall, and certainly that's not the case yet, it could be about the heat as we go through pollination. What are the meteorologists saying about the weather as you look forward, and how much of an impact that could have on the corn crop? Or is this corn crop just in really good condition?
The corn crop's in really good condition right now, but as you say that, one of the main advisory firms out there today at noon, and he's on the road this week doing meetings as such that way, and BAM Weather is with him, and his headline read, "We see potential for extreme heat in July, including very high nighttime low temperatures." Along with that come his recommendation, if we would have made new highs today, to buy back all of your hedges in your December corn and in your November beans. It did not make a new high after that point in time, so he hasn't, but that's the way the weather forecast that they're putting out does make him scared and say we are near a bottom.
So this is one of those things that folks are going to really have to watch. Now they're thinking, hey, I've got a corn crop, but really we've not gotten to pollination yet.
Yeah, we still have a long ways to go in both crops. But I will say this. I think as we're speaking about the June 29th report, to me, on the corn crop side of it, or the corn market side of it, it's a demand market. It's really a strong demand market. And one of the key things is going to be, I think there needs to be a confirmation on that stocks report in June that we are using more than what the USDA has been putting into their projections, because a lot of the private projections are quite a bit higher on feed and both feed and ethanol and somewhat on exports. So I think that's going to be a real key, too, as far as where the demand side of it is. And if we have a lot more stocks, I think people are going to have to consider whether we had a bigger crop last year than maybe we thought we did.
Is there any indication from the first two grain stocks reports of the year or whether this one will change very much or not?
Well, I think that's the first two stocks reports has led to most of the trade believing that we're probably feeding more than what the USDA has put into the balance sheet. We'll see, though, as we get into this report, because that's a key factor there, I believe, as we go into July, especially if Wayne's correct and, you know, we're seeing heat going into that pollination period or probably in the middle of pollination in some areas.
I know you've been following pretty closely what the livestock sector looks like. You always do, Kurt. What do we know about that sector and how much it might be consuming on the corn side of the ledger, please?
Well, we're looking at ample supplies of beef, pork, and poultry, so this feed usage demand's good. Feed usage as a whole is kind of a miscellaneous category, but true feed usage is relatively strong. Livestock producers have an opportunity to lock in some lower feed cost in here on this break. The key is, though, is this NAFTA and tariffs with China. We don't want to see that dispute heat up in the meat sector because we've got a real good export market going, and we don't want to jinx that. As far as numbers in general, the cattle and feed report, you know, we'll see how that unfolds. The export is good. Per capita consumption continues to grow in through here, so there's going to be some real opportunities to, in the supply-demand balance, to see that feed usage number stay strong.
Wayne, I want to come back to the tariffs since we've mentioned them again. The administration already putting in place $50 billion say that on July 6th, if the Chinese do retaliate, and they've said they will, that they'll add $200 billion. Of course, that caused the precipitous drop on Tuesday of this week. If and when those were to go in place Is there more to come from that $200 billion in terms of downside in the market?
I think if we start in and they retaliate, we probably will. There was a comment made, we buy more from them than they buy for us, so we can put more tariffs than they can on. You know, there was one of the university people said that basically they thought it would cost China $3 billion and America $3 billion to put these on. I'm hoping that everybody would like to save $3 billion and we can get back to the negotiating table. But if we start throwing on tariffs and actually implement them, it isn't going to stop with just China. We're having Europe and everybody else, Mexico, Canada. Everybody wants to get in the ball game, and we're not their favorite people to deal with. So we're going to get slammed really hard if we don't do some good hard negotiating soon.
And, of course, Wally Tyner, who is an agricultural economist at Purdue, he also looked forward to see what he thought might be the change in the U.S. crop. And he said essentially the price of corn and soybeans would both go down in the future. So a tariff, just not a really good thing.
No, and that's, I think the other part of it is you have to really step back and kind of look at it from a wider lens and say what is the incentive for China to come to some agreement at this point. You know, basically they're buying their beans that are a lot cheaper than what they bought prior to this all taking place. So I think just from a practical standpoint, they may not be very they may have a little bit of a disincentive to come to the table too quickly. And I know that they have a lot of other considerations that they have to make as far as their people go and their cost over there.
How forward bought do we believe that China might be in this marketplace? Meaning when we look forward through July, August, September, how much of their needs do we think they have met?
First half of September.
So through then. But that gives them to the point at which we would normally switch to U.S. imported beans rather from Brazil.
Yeah, the key is usually this time of year we start seeing those new crop sales pop up on the screen at 8 o'clock in the morning, and those just aren't happening at the moment here. So as we move into this fall in here, they need to start doing that if it's going to happen, because what's happening is logistics worldwide, the boats, they got to be strategically placed moving grain throughout the world. And that's going to mess up a whole lot of transportation if they don't get those beans booked and booked to be shipped.
So, and we've seen the Brazilian bean bases just skyrocket here since all this started taking place. So their prices that they're again to the farmer has gone up because the basis levels have gone up, even though and the currency weakness net it's probably a lower price than what it was, but they are a stronger price from a basis standpoint.
Any reason to believe that the Argentine beans, which have been in storage, I know they had a bad crop, but they had a big crop in storage, or a lot of, almost full crop, I think, in storage. Any reason to believe that will make its way out of the country, whether it crosses a border or through their export market?
It could very easily go into Brazil to kick some of their short fall down for their crushing plants along the way. I know that the farmers have been very tight holders, thinking that they're going to get a $2 bonus over the American beans, and they're looking forward to next year. Remember, Brazil also was slowed down terribly by the trucker strike. They lost, I forget what the exact was, the tonnage was tremendous, but they lost just about a full week of exports, and the farmers, you know, nothing was moving and they were shipped out. So there was boats sitting there for an extra week. You know, the other thing going on here is we're looking ahead here, and China has already been discussing a canola out of Canada. They're talking about implementing, they've got a big wheat stocks that they can start blending into their hog feed. They've got 15 ethanol plants they're going to be opening up sometime this year. They'll have DDGs to use instead of some of this stuff. They're looking ahead at what they might need to do to stand off and take this trade war for a while with the U.S. They don't believe they're wrong with their intellectual properties theft. They have done this since the beginning of time. You know, they went out and stole stuff years and years ago. They took it, they brought it home after they pillaged and plundered, and they've done this. And this is their 2025 thing. It's building their economy. It's going strong. They don't want to turn back on that, and they don't have any guilt feelings about it. We need to find something that we can negotiate with instead of push something they don't think they're wrongdoing?
Well, the trade deficit or the trade difference is we buy $550 billion of products from them. They only buy $129, $30 billion of products from us. However, they hold most of our debt, so they better cooperate. We might not make those debt payments. Secondly, they've been big, big shoppers here in the U.S. They own a lot of property here in the U.S., so, you know, that's not common for Americans to go in and own Chinese property. So there's some leverage to be had here if they want to hold this hold out here over the longer term.
Anything we learned from the experience with Japan, if we can recall that, in the 90s when they purchased a great deal of real estate in the United States, there was a big deficit, trade deficit with that nation, that we can use as a guidepost here at all? Does anybody recall how any of that happened? Maybe it was a long time ago, so maybe not so much. But I'm wondering, on the other side of this, when we get a little further out, if we can find a place where we are no longer thinking about a trade war with China or with any of the rest of the nations, and if Mr. Trump happens to be successful, what do we think the cost is to this point? Have we lost market share? Can we, or not? If so, can we gain it back? What are those sorts of things?
Personally, I'm not sure that we've lost market share at this point. I think the tariffs haven't been implemented yet. We still have a ways to go in this thing. So I think that the reality is China's going to have to buy beans off us. They can't buy all their beans from Brazil. Brazil can't provide all the beans that they buy. So I think that we're going to be used as a last resort. But from a global standpoint, in the near term, I think that we're going to be okay. In a longer term, which is, I think, what you're asking about, I think that, you know, once you we kind of found that with the embargo situation back in a long time ago. Once you kind of lose that customer, then it's hard to get them back.
Wally Tyner, again, from Purdue, said that China produces only 16% of the soybeans that they consume annually. So it's not at this point as if they can make it up internally.
That's very true, Todd. And I think that, like I said, they're looking at a lot of different ways as to if they need to. They would just as soon still continue to, they have to have something where they save face, they come in, it looks to the Chinese people that they got something out of this deal. You know, President Trump, you know, he wrote the book, The Art of the Deal. He is the deal maker of the world. We hope that he can step in here in the next 2 weeks and get something done. You know, Warren Buffett says he's not scared of this. He thinks that a deal will be made in time. I know he's pretty sharp on most things, so I guess I'm going to, you know, bet with Warren Buffett here that we're going to have a guy go and make a good deal.
Well, we'll find that out, I suppose, on July 6th. That won't take very long until we find out.
That will be a critical time. You're right.
July 5th at midnight. July 5th at midnight.
That's the time we will be watching, and everybody will have their screens on to see where we are at that point. Let's get a final word from each of you at this point. I think, Bill, I'll start with you.
Okay, I guess one of the things we may not have mentioned, you had asked about acres earlier. I think one of the first things that's going to be very important as we move forward is to watch South America and see, as you talked about, the corn-soybean ratio. They've got more incentive to plant more acres of beans now. How much will they increase their bean acres, and how much will they be able to increase their bean acres and get it exported? I think that's a key thing that as we move through the summer and into the fall, that's going to be something that's going to be key on everybody's mind.
This is because they would set their corn-soybean ratio based off basis rather than really what's happening in Chicago. Most people do, but we can, in the United States, use the Chicago as our footprint.
Yeah, their cash soybean corn ratio is probably better than what we're looking at on the future side of it.
Bill Mayer, of course, is with Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign. Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's out of New Market, Indiana.
Well, the farmers have lost about $100 an acre income potential right now compared to what we had just 3 weeks ago, Todd. That puts them in a very hurt situation. We hope that the banks will not be very critical over the time period here until we can get these tariffs straightened around. We've heard that the bank auditors have been ordered to look at ag loans more closely in the next 6 months. And we would hope that maybe something comes down out of Washington that says, let's try to keep our ag community healthy.
And Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. He's out of Normal, Illinois.
Well, at this point in time, I don't know if I'd change or alter your marketing plan a whole lot. There are some crash protection strategies out there if you are nervous about what's taking place and worried about some additional downside price risk. There's some conservative ways to cover that risk.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org, willag.org, and there you will find our calendar of events. You can look to see where I will be, and in just 1 week, we'll be in Assumption, Illinois at Assumption Fest. This is for breakfast. It's open to everyone. Kurt Kimmel, actually, will be there, along with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and Kim Holzapfel from TGM, Total Grain Marketing out of Effingham, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. We hope to see you there. That, of course, is Friday morning, June 29th in Assumption at Assumption Fest. Breakfast starts at 7, runs through 9 o'clock. We should be up on stage at 8:30 a.m. And Rodney Davis, representative from the area, will be there to speak as well. One other note, that date happens also to be the day of the acreage and the grain stocks numbers at 11 a.m. Visit willag.org, and we'll have those numbers there as quickly as we can. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. I'm Todd Gleason.